In Ireland, nothing gets us talking like lions.
Tea?
Small talk.
Well, Jimmy, shocking weather we're having.
Big talk.
Even I could have played county. Office talk.
I'm MIA in the AM, but I'll circle back on the KPIs.
Real talk.
Milk before tea? Should be a criminal offence.
You could say we talk too much.
But the truth is,
we don't talk nearly enough. Lions puts the talk into tea.
The last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
For the week trending, we're joined by Roe McDermott, journalist and Irish Times columnist, and Cathal O'Sullivan, who is a producer at 98FM. I'm going to start with something we did touch upon a little bit yesterday, but it's got a lot of attention over the week since the St. Patrick's Day parades on Tuesday. And Gardaí now apparently are making inquiries about the activities of people involved in these so-called Epstein Files themed floats at a number of parades in the northwest of the country. These have been condemned by sexual abuse support groups as trivialising rape. The Garda statement is that An Garda Síochána is aware of concerns raised in relation to the activities surrounding certain participants who took part in a number of St. Patrick's Day parades in the northwestern region. An Garda Síochána is making inquiries into the activities complained of. I just wonder, though, what laws have been broken, no matter how offensive it was. Cathal, will you just remind us of what has happened? Because it seems there are two floats involved here, aren't there, which went to multiple locations?
Yeah, so this was on St. Patrick's Day, obviously a number of parades happening around the country, and both in County Mayo and in County Galway we saw a float depicting what I suppose was labelled as the Epstein Files. And specifically the one I first saw was the one in Ballinrobe, and it was a tractor leading a trailer full of a group of youths dressed up as, I suppose, masked men and different other men in suits and things like that. I suppose assaulting what was dressed as a woman lying down on a bed and depicting what I suppose they would call the Epstein Files and what was depicted in that. We also saw another float in County Galway with it was depicting Stephen Hawking and Donald Trump as well, and Sean Diddy Combs also on this, and a woman or a young man dressed up as a woman with balloons under his top and wearing a wig. I've seen the video a number of times, and the only thing I keep saying to people is it's just outrageous and it's shocking, and it's like it just doesn't like.
But sorry, who thought this would be funny to have on a float to go through a Patrick's Day parade? Was there nobody in charge of the parade who would have pulled it away and said, stop, you're not allowed to do this?
And I think I heard Rachel Morrow last night on your show, and I suppose this comes back to, I suppose, the rape culture and sexual assault culture that people, we see so much in Ireland nowadays, that it is people mocking it and I suppose not taking it seriously. And Rachel Moore last night on your show said that they've had a number of calls from survivors saying how much it affected them and how it made them feel. But also, like, the number of calls they're getting is, I suppose, testament to how many people are outraged by this and that it is a small minority in these local villages. But like you say, who was, I suppose, controlling these parades? Who did the check? Like, I was down in Portlaoise for St. Patrick's Day, my own town, and like there was a number of stewards and different things that see this floats before they go off. So you have to question who was in charge.
Of course, you also have a report in the Irish Independent, an unnamed father of one of those who was involved, the implication being the teenagers did this, saying, what's all the fuss about, Ro?
Yeah, and I think that really speaks to this idea of young, I mean, I was about to say young boys, young men, teenage boys who are increasingly engaging in these public displays of harassment and it not being tackled at a family level, at a community level. And, you know, there was a case up the north of, there is an increase overall in Europe and in Ireland of female teachers being sexually harassed by their students who are in their teens and tweens. And there was a case up the north of a group of young students who were 14, 15, circling their female teachers, harassing them, sexually harassing, blocking them from getting out of classrooms, and they were suspended for a day and the parents all complained. And this idea of we have to, boys will be boys and it's just a joke, and I think that's really dangerous. But I think what the parade showed to me is something I've been noticing so starkly, is that we're talking about outrage, and of course it's outrageous, but it speaks to this huge divide in the reaction to the Epstein files that I'm seeing playing out on so many levels. Like, if we look at it politically, nobody has been arrested for rape or sexual trafficking apart from one woman. The conversation has very quickly moved on to, like, oh, what is the political information that these leaders have shared? And that's the only kind of punishment that has been doled out. And those punishments have been very small and kind of in the single figures. But even on a personal relationship level, like, I'm 37, I'm seeing so many women my age having this really upsetting grappling with the fact that, you know, I received more sexual attention from the ages of 11 to 17 than I have in my life since. Like, the amount of catcalling, of sexual harassment, of attention from older men. Women are grappling with the beauty standards we've been fed, that we're told to keep our bodies tiny and skinny and like children and hairless. And, you know, we're devalued as we age. And we're grappling with the way we are viewed in society and how children are sexualized. And if you look at any Irish newspaper, child sex abuse is absolutely rampant, and it's rampant within families. And we have this historic, of course, legacy of child sex
abuse. Well, indeed, there's a bit of the sort of the stranger danger type comments coming into 0874100102. The reality is those most at risk tend to be within their own families, and the people known to them.
People known. And that's across the board with sexual violence, is that we always have this lie. It's a stranger down an alleyway. And those are the exceptions, not the rule. The rule is that there are people known to the victims. And I think that separation between the amount of survivors of any form of sexual abuse, whether it was as a child or as an adult, the women who are grappling with this fallout, and people who feel completely separate from it, don't think about it in political terms or make jokes, is huge. And I think that speaks to the rape culture that we still live in, that some people are able to separate themselves quick, completely, not empathize, and make these horrendous jokes about it.
But we're getting comments, one says, what about freedom of speech? Is this a freedom of speech issue to put up a display like that?
Sorry, the government isn't coming in and stopping the float. There is a cultural reaction to jokes about sexual violence. I hate when people throw around this freedom of speech as if you don't get critical cultural backlash from ordinary people. You don't get to say what you want without consequence.
It's responsibility. This responsibility accompanying. And another one here. What do you think of this one, Carl? Young men have no future in this country. Constantly tarred with the same brush, all portrayed to be rapist, harassing individuals.
I suppose I don't necessarily agree with that, being a young man in Ireland and knowing a lot of my friends as well. But I think, like, I didn't finish school. I finished school about 9 years ago. And in, I suppose, my latter years of a secondary school education, we were learning a little bit about consent and what it was, and kind of, I suppose, what it was to become an older man and grow up and learn about this. And I think it's almost like these young men need to go back and learn this again in school, because this kind of manosphere that we see, kind of even Louis Theroux's documentary is trending now on Netflix, and it's going back to these younger males who, I suppose, don't really care what they're saying online. And like you say, okay, freedom of speech, these textures, but you can't say what you want without being criticised in the public sphere either.
And I think that the lie of this narrative of young men are being tarnished by the same brush, and it's feminists and social justice people and the left are disenfranchising these young men. Young men are disenfranchised because of patriarchy, that it limits them. The manosphere tells them they're not allowed to have mental health problems, they're not allowed to have vulnerability, they're not allowed to show emotion. Their only worth is in making money and subjugating women. It is always feminist people on the left, people who are into quote-unquote woke politics, because it's used as a pejorative, saying we want young men to be fully rounded versions of themselves. We want to show them to show up with their vulnerability. We want to give them opportunities. It's us who are critiquing capitalism, who makes people believe that their only worth lies in what they can produce and how much money they can make. And these young men are ignoring all of that and listening to these very influential people who are making money out of absolutely, like, grifting and conning them and saying, you know, buy into my crypto scam and I'm going to sell you a fitness plan and tell you that, you know, that's your only worth in life. They're buying into that. Young men are disenfranchised. I think we are constantly talking about, and I will go to speak on behalf of feminists now, we are constantly talking about how to protect them, and then we're dismissed as being the problem.
Okay, other ones. That float was tasteless and disgusting. What were they and the organisers thinking? It's not okay. And I've explained this to my 13-year-old son. Dads, we need to use this as a teachable moment. Mm-hmm. Another one says, why do schools have to teach boys how to behave and about consent? Why can't parents do this at home? Some responsibility needed from parents.
Yeah, absolutely. And like that, it's a thing of, like, young teenagers spending the majority of their lives in school and they're learning these things and they're learning from their peers. But, like, it comes back to that of, like, you being at home as well, but also, like, what teenagers, I suppose, are allowed to view online as well, like the likes of Andrew Tate and things like that. It comes back to what they're allowed to view with, I suppose, their mobile devices and their computers and things like that. And it comes back to that thing like Ro was saying, like, it's not the woke left. It's just actual people who are respectful and, I suppose, understand, I suppose, that what happened in the Epstein files was completely wrong and it isn't a joke. I'm sure these teenagers who are on this float haven't a clue what went on. They know the top line of some women were raped and sexually assaulted and they decided to make a joke about it. And it shouldn't be a case of they're being blamed or schools are being blamed. What they did was wrong at the end of the day.
Can I just come in on that parental responsibility? Of course, parents have a responsibility to teach their children good values and keep an eye on what they're looking at online. But I will flag, like, I've been talking about the need for consent education and sex education in Ireland. The amount of pushback I get on that constantly, of people saying, I don't want my children participating in that in schools, of people saying consent shouldn't be taught. I've been on so many shows with men saying, no, like, you're overstepping. And these are also the households that are never going to talk about consent. Sex educators are constantly under attack from conservative groups who twist what sex educators do and make it seem wrong or excessive or paedophilic and grooming and all of these things because they don't want children learning about consent. So if we leave it up to parents, it means half of the kids who are going to school are never going to learn that. So it needs to be universal and it can't be based on the individual values of certain families who don't buy into this. It needs to be universal and that's why it needs to be in schools.
I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Today is the final day of submissions to the National Transport Authority as to whether pets should be allowed on public transport. Did you make a submission, Cathal?
I did not, no.
Okay. If you had, if we pushed you to do so, what would you say?
Well, I suppose what we're talking about here is the National Transport Authority kind of making the rules with bringing pets on board both bus, rail and Lewis services kind of the same across the board. Currently, they have different rules for all three.
I didn't realise until I was reading this today that I could bring my dog on a train down to Cork, for example, yeah, but I couldn't bring it on the bus.
Mm. Yeah, so I commuted to Portlaoise for 4 years before I moved to Dublin. And oftentimes I did see dogs on the train, cats oftentimes as well. So as it stands, Bus Éireann does not permit dogs or cats or other animals on its buses. Dublin Bus animals are not permitted if they're likely to cause annoyance or damage to any customer or property. And then on Éireann Road Éireann and Irish Rail, dogs and cats are permitted once they remain in the owner's lap or they're muzzled if they're a larger dog. And obviously guide dogs across.
Although
the border,
small dogs can bite too.
Yeah, absolutely. If I was pushed on it, I suppose I'd say like that, if they're causing no harm, I don't really find offence to animals being on public transport. But then there are people, I suppose, that would be fearful of dogs and have traumatic experiences with them, or they may even have allergies. And I know it comes down to something so small as such as an allergy, but when you're in an enclosed space like that, it might be the most comfortable thing. But personally, I would have no qualms with it.
What about you, Ro?
I think for people, particularly people who live on their own and who are pet owners and don't have a car, I think not being able to get, you know, bring your cat or your small dog to the vet on public transport and stuff, it makes it very difficult, or not being able to stay, you know, get over to your partner's house if you have a cat to bring them over for the weekend. So I think it's going to be very helpful for a lot of pet owners. I do think there are issues around hygiene. I also think there are going to be issues around people assuming that their pet isn't an annoyance or isn't frightening anybody or isn't being disruptive. I will say I've seen cats on the loose and it's always been like the best day of my week. But I think people often do take the mic and people think their pets are delightful and that everybody is going to enjoy them. And I have a cat and there's loads of and I love dogs and there's loads of lovely dogs in my area. But I've had a neighbourhood dog run into my house and the owner thought it was, oh yeah, aren't they cheeky? Yes. I was like, no, I have a cat in my house. Like, you can't do this. So I think sometimes pet owners are so in love with their cats that they protect them and won't stop them hassling people. So I think we'll have to be wary of that. I was remembering in the New York Tube or New York Subway is what they call it over there. They brought in a rule of you could bring a dog on the subway if it could fit into a bag. And they basically meant tiny Paris Hilton yapper dogs in handbags. And you had people getting those giant blue IKEA bags and cutting leg holes in and bringing like huskies and German shepherds on them. So I think Irish people are going to bend the rules and that is inevitable.
But then what about other pets other than dogs and cats, which everybody is? I mean, if
bees,
you want...
just release bees.
No, if you wanted to say, for example, if you wanted to bring your budgie or your parrot in its cage from one place to another, would that be allowed? Some people keep snakes. We could have snakes on a train.
Oh, do the Britney Spears toxic routine just on the Lewis. Like, be great.
Under the NTA rules that they're proposing from this like public consultation, the animal must be carried in a suitable box, basket or other container. So like, are we going to have snakes in like just a jar, like a biscuit jar or something? Animals not allowed on seats. They must remain in the customer's lap at all times and must be kept away from other travelling animals. So what would happen if there was a Jack Russell and a husky on a train and they start to fight?
Well, okay, that is a good point. What if happens if other passengers have allergies to pets? Other passengers pay for their tickets too. There's lots coming in this. I don't think they should be allowed. We will end up with the majority having to accommodate the few. What happens if there's a problematic animal? Then everyone has to deal with it. Then what about the people who think their animal is the best? Everyone make excuses for bad animal behaviour. And again, everyone else has to put up with it. Another one says, love the idea of dogs on board trains. The owners may be the issue, though, says Carol Ann.
Yeah, and I think the problem with like hygiene and allergies is that you can't say put all the animals in the same section, because then you're going to have dogs at each other. You're going to have a dog stressing out a cat. So it's not like you can section off and go, if you have allergies, avoid this section. So I think the management of it is going to be...
Okay, but listener says they could put one pet-friendly carriage so people who don't like pets could use the rest of the train, just like you have the quiet carriages on the intercity services.
That's a good idea.
Again,
good idea.
Like, you can't say for certain that like your dog may be calm at home and may be quiet, but you can't say for certain that when it is in an enclosed space like a train, that it won't attack another dog or attack another cat or something like that.
Another one says, regarding what the National Transport Authority says the rules will be, do you honestly believe that Irish people will follow them?
No.
No, I was on a train just this past weekend and rules around vaping and stuff on board were not being adhered to and things like that. So like, when it comes to things like that, there was no Irish Rail member on board to do this. And they aren't always there. As someone who uses the train, they're often there like most times during the week, but at the weekend they aren't necessarily always there.
Do you know the modern trolley problem? And it's kind of this sign of, are you a good person if you're in a supermarket, do you return your trolley to the bay? And it's like something no one's going to police you for it, there's no punishment for it, it's just, are you a good person doing this? And I think the newest version of this is, are you someone who blasts your phone without headphones on public transport? And there are so many of them, and if we live in a society where that is accepted, I don't believe that people are going to take care of their dogs on the Lewis. People have gotten very self-absorbed and believe their media is fascinating and we all want to hear it. And I think that will translate into, my dog's lovely, you'll all want it sniffing your crotch.
I love this one from Paul, who says, I was on a bus through the mountains in India once with 20 loose goats. Nobody batted an eyelid. The smell was quite something though.
Kids deserve to be on public transport too.
All right. Okay. Harry Styles was the guest presenter of Saturday Night Live last weekend, and in the tradition of that programme, they always seem to mark St. Patrick's Day with an Irish sketch. So he did an Irish dancing sketch, which went on for, I think, about 2.5 minutes. We're not going to play it in full, but let's hear just some of it.
Roll up in the club, hey, this is VIP. Me and all my boys, yeah, but I got a girl next to me. She says that she's a dancer.
I'm a dancer.
That means she's a freak. Can we just see her move?
Get ready.
My knees are getting weak. She puts me in a chair.
Wait here.
It's about to get hot. Yeah, she's a dancer.
But not the kind you thought.
Girls?
Well, yes, it's Irish style. No sexist dance, no smack. You only use your legs. Kick them as fast as you can. First you put your foot like this and your shoulders back. Then you put your hands on your hips and then you go effing nuts.
I would like it on the record that Cahill's head was bobbing away.
Well, I do have to ticket Harry Styles in Wembley in June, but I hope
he won't be playing that.
I hope he won't be singing that, man.
Okay, did you take offence to that? Like a lot of people apparently have to what they regard as Irish stereotyping. That's just a little bit of the sketch, although I don't think they brought any potatoes into it.
Cabbage stew and fish pie.
Oh,
apparently.
They did?
Yes.
Oh.
Like, which I don't consider nationally traditionally Irish dishes. But anyway, personally, I take anything SNL does with a pinch of salt. It's very much like brush it off. And I don't necessarily always find it funny. It was very funny back in, I suppose, the early days of SNL. The recent stuff, it doesn't really tickle me. But like, I didn't find it offensive really in any way. But that's just me, I suppose. Maybe I'm kind of thick skinned.
No, I actually thought it was fine. And there have been a handful of SNL sketches over the years that I've thought were funny. I think if you're looking to SNL for intelligence, nuance, humor, you fundamentally misunderstand SNL sketch comedy and America, basically.
Yeah.
And they've had loads of really bad sketches over the years that have been Irish stereotypes. They had one with Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson a couple of years ago where it was all about drinking and fighting, which was very distasteful because Colin Farrell is like famously sober and they were implying he was going to get drunk. They've had Irish dating show sketches that are all about Irish people dating their cousins. I mean, the things they've made Saoirse Ronan do are kind of a war crime. But in fairness, they had a very funny one, I think it was 2 years ago, of Paul Mescal, where it was about what Irish Americans expect to happen when they come to Ireland and going, oh, I'm like 1/16th American or Irish, and they expect a grand parade and to be given like a town square and to meet the president and all this stuff. I thought this was fine. I think, to be honest, if you want to get offended about it, do. But I don't know anybody who hasn't jokingly done really bad Irish dancing at a nightclub like after a couple of drinks, and we all take the mick out of Michael Flatley. Do you know what I mean? Like, we are affectionately very silly about these things anyway. When Americans do it, because they have a long history of stereotyping us, I think we're getting our back up. But I actually thought the setup of you're expecting a sexy dance and then you get Irish dance, I thought that was mildly amusing.
We have loved the SNL sketch. It was really funny, says one listener. Another one says, I found it funny. Lord, we need to be able to laugh at ourselves. They take the piss out of themselves too. Another one says, offended by everything, but it's okay when it's Harry Styles. Sense of humour, but only when you think it's okay. All right.
I'm sorry, isn't that the definition of a sense of humour?
Oh, yeah. Sure, I know. Another one says, the Aer Lingus sketch many years ago was very funny. That was the one with Saoirse Ronan, wasn't it?
She did one. Yeah, they made her do another one, and the amount of time they've got her to explain her name and jokes about her name is exhausting.
Yeah, another one says, if SNL upsets Irish people, they're taking themselves too seriously. If they're taking the piss, they're impressed by us. How many times have we taken the piss out of the Yanks? There was a story in the Irish Independent today called that really caught my eye, because I remember discussing this over a year ago about the potential for taking delivery of electric buses before there would be charges in the bus depots to charge them up each evening. We have more than 130 electric buses, which cost the bones of £500,000 each, sitting idle, of course, across Dublin and in Galway and Limerick, because we didn't have chargers installed in the bus depots. And this just strikes me as just been incredible. This, because the National Transport Authority has admitted this to an Oireachtas committee. But I would have thought that if you place an order to buy an electric bus, it's going to take time before it's delivered to you. And that would give you the time to put in place the charges for when the bus does arrive.
Yeah, so this is very, I suppose, to any listener, I suppose, they're probably rolling their eyes thinking this is typically Irish. Yeah, 85 electric buses in Dublin, 43 in Galway and Limerick waiting to enter the fleet. These buses were ordered, like you say, and they take up to 12 to 24 months to, I suppose, land at their depot.
And that's not enough time to put in charging facilities in the depots.
So this is what they say. In addition, there can be up to a year between the delivery of the first bus and the last bus under a single order. But as a consequence, it's virtually impossible, they say, to align the charger installations and bus manufacturing schedules.
Utter nonsense.
They say this is virtually the same thing happening all over Europe that everyone
really, I'd love to hear the proof of that.
Matt, things are impossible if you don't think about them or plan for them,
yes,
in any way.
True.
They become very difficult.
But isn't it blindingly obvious?
Yeah.
I mean, surely, you know, when they order petrol or diesel buses, they have fuel depots at the bus depots to be able to refuel the buses before they go out each morning or when they come back each evening. And if you do that with petrol and diesel, you do the same with electric charging points.
Yeah, and I think it's just, it's touching on so many issues. It's so many people were so aware that public transport and the infrastructure there is so limiting, and this was a promise of it. It was also this promise of it, this investment in green transport, but without investing in the systems to make it operational. And this idea of just this deeper problem of state capacity and kind of continued incompetence and people being aware that we're spending public money and we're making big announcements about progress, but then these just absolutely really stupid problems are arising and people feeling like we're wasting money, we're wasting time. And I was Googling how much was that printer that, you know, couldn't fit and is now in the basement of the Dáil, and it was 2 million, and the 335 grand bike shed. And people are just so frustrated with these really stupid problems and this huge spending and this lack of planning. And I think it just cuts into this kind of suspicion we have and exasperation we have with incompetence at this real high level. But I also
said the National Transport Authority should be looking at things being delivered on time. You would think logistics and organisation would be part of their brief, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, yeah. And it comes down to, I suppose, what it says here in the Irish Independent article, that a number of local authorities take different approaches when it comes to the installation of chargers and the different charging points. And I suppose some of them require kind of the NTA to go through the full planning application, and others are taking...
Yeah, this listener says, disingenuous to Dublin Bus, these are delayed due to planning issues and people objecting to new substations. Again, I wonder. I mean, you've got plenty of time to get that all sorted out while you're waiting for the buses to be delivered. And if you know you don't have the planning permission for the substations or for the chargers, you don't order the shagging buses for £500,000 a time, do you?
There was 220 buses ordered, so we obviously have 130 at the moment and 69 remaining to enter the fleet, apparently. So, like, the fact that these are still waiting on buses and there's still no chargers in place, it's just beggars belief, man.
I was in Dundrum Town Centre the other day and they have centres now where you can rent out a charger for your phone. And I was like, that's amazing that they're thinking of shoppers more than people running transport are thinking about people getting the bus. They're thinking about phone chargers.
Well, funny, the hauliers from during the week were saying that, you know, everyone's telling them to go to electric trucks and there are all sorts of grants available to transition to electric trucks, but the problem still remains. If you're going around the country in an electric truck, where are you going to actually recharge? Mm-hmm. So that's why a lot of them won't make the thing, because we don't have the infrastructure in place. Now, tell us about, Ro, this house down in County Meath, which I believe is in the process of being demolished at present.
It is.
A house that was, I think, was a 6,500 square feet in size.
Yeah, it was very, very large in Bohemian, and it was built in 2006 without planning permission. The couple had submitted planning permission for a small dormer bungalow, I believe. They had been rejected.
It wasn't that small. I think it was about 2,500 square feet.
Tiny compared to what they built in the end. And they were rejected for that. And then they went ahead and built this mammoth family home that has been there 20 years. And they have kind of delayed proceedings, like, over with every loophole in the book and submitting all of these applications and resubmitting. But it's been 20 years now and demolition has started. There's a video of it, the house being knocked down. And to me, the story for me touches on so many things. It's Ireland's kind of famously lenient and kind of somewhat rebellious attitude towards rules, our dislike of power trips and kind of arbitrary rules, and our appeal to common sense, I think, when we see a rule and go, ah, now, come on, like, can we have a bit of cop?
Well, it's also like, it's a bit of, if you build it, nobody will really make us knock
exactly.
it down. And sure, if you've got such a big house, wouldn't it be an awful shame to rent? Wouldn't it be an awful waste? So leave it there. And indeed, there are people texting in with examples of well-known people around the country mm-hmm. who did build without planning permission and then got allowed to keep their house.
And I think, but this is the thing, because we have this rebellious attitude towards rule, but we also have this very strong resistance to entitlement. And when we feel people, particularly people with a bit of money, are cheating the system when other hard-working people are living within it. And I think there's all of these things are at play. So Meath County Council, I think, are famously very rigid and seem very arbitrary to how many buildings can be put up, why they deny things. And I think a lot of locals have complained about how arbitrary these rules have seemed, particularly for young couples who are trying to build on land because of the housing crisis. So locals are saying this wouldn't have happened if the original fairly reasonable planning permission had been granted. And I think a family home being built on a large plot of land without permission, it's obviously breaking the rules, but it's not in the same league as like an apartment building blocking light or even that recent Sutton extension case where the extension was very obstructive and overlooking the neighbours. However, the family obviously have money. I think they have another house abroad that they've been staying in. And there's a very understandable and important resistance to people with money doing what they want with impunity and not letting their disregard for the law slide. And I think we have this sense of integrity of you can push the rules, but don't take the mick. But then, you know, it's a family house seeing it destroyed, which is upsetting on an emotional level, I think, particularly for the kids who had nothing to do with this. But
indeed, the solicitor, Damien Kilkenny, says the amount of retention applications I see in the local planning smacks of asking for forgiveness rather than permissions should have been torn down years ago. And yet, I think there's changes coming to the planning laws that are going to allow all sorts of things like putting in Velux windows, having bicycle sheds in the front garden, all the type of things that are currently disallowed are going to be allowed. I suspect some people will make hay with that call.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I suppose as someone who is amongst a lot of friends who are currently like maybe thinking about eventually building a house or wanting to build a house in their local area. And like, I live in the town of Portlaoise, but a lot of my friends live outside in the rural areas of it. And a lot of them meeting, I suppose, battles to get planning permission and different things like that.
Why are they looking for one-off houses, are they?
Yeah, this is... On family land, Matt. And I suppose when I think of the case of Rose and Chris Byrne, they obviously purchased this land and wanted to build on it and went through a load of different planning applications. But subsequently, I heard just this week Rose in an interview talking about how houses where they applied previously were refused and then they were built on the cul-de-sac. Like Ro, I say it's kind of, I suppose, the thing of them, they're asking for forgiveness now rather than granting permission. I don't
agree. What's the line from that old build it and they will come in Ireland? Yeah. Build it and they won't knock it down.
Yeah, and they won't. But I don't agree with that. And I don't agree with people breaking the rules. But I just, you know what, it's typically Irish as well again.
We're finished with the week trending. Thank you very much, Carlos Sullivan, producer of 98FM, Ro McDermott, journalist with the Irish Times.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.